Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is Sunday, October 28th, 2018. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like this show, please rate and review it on Apple Podcasts and or Stitcher. Give it a 5-star review. Let everyone know why you like it, because it will make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. Let me know what's on your mind. More importantly, what's on your heart. You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can follow me, your host, the guy talking to you right now, on Twitter at Chris Lamberth. This is episode 316. I have a super special return guest, comedian and podcaster, Andy Klein, one of the greats. You know him, you love him. He's on the Three Guys On podcast. And I'm going to share that conversation with you in a bit. Right now, I'm just going to talk to you for a few moments. I am right now in Hartford, Connecticut, at the Red Lion Hotel, formerly the Radisson, in the heart of downtown Hartford, Connecticut. I just got done doing shows at the City Steam Brewery at the Brouhaha Cafe at City Steam. And they were fun. We had some really good shows. I opened for Patty Rossboro, and Rich Grillo was the MC. Had a really good weekend. The first show, it's always good doing the Friday night. Get that first show under your belt. Second show was good, a lot of fun. And the third show, there were just like a handful of people there. But it was actually probably the most fun. I talked to them. And for me, like, I'm really like, I do my act and I like to make people laugh. And yeah, I'm being present and stuff. But sometimes it's even more fun when you really connect with people. So that was fun. So yeah, I'm going to head back, and hopefully by the time you guys listen to this, I'll be on my way home, or I'll be going back to Jersey and all that good stuff. If you listen to it the day that it comes out, and maybe I'll be in Walmart while you're listening. Maybe I'm thinking of going to Walmart on my way out of town. So we'll see. I don't know. There's a lot of things that could happen, folks. Yeah, so this past week was cool. I started the week off headlining at my home club at Levity Live in West Nyack, New York. And it's a big deal. Like I've said this before, it is, and I think I say it, and Andy and I kind of dissected a little bit that experience, because I always like getting advice from Andy, talking shop with him about comedy and things like that. He's one of my comedy mentors. He probably wouldn't say that, but he is. Him and Randolph and Maranzio Vance. So three of those guys, like those three dudes, I look to for guidance and sometimes a kick in the ass, which one of them did give me a kick in the ass last week, and I needed it because I did something that was kind of not anything bad to a woman, but it was just a career thing that I fucked up, and I think there'll be other opportunities, but anyway, without further, any more conversations on that, I don't even need to go down that route, but headline my home club for the first time. And it is definitely a big deal when you're an up and coming comic and the club that you call your home gives you that off night to headline. And it's another feather that I can put in my cap to where I headline a major A room. Now, there were only maybe 15 people, if that. There were not that many people there. But the people that, so I was a little bummed about that. But at the same time, I knew those 15 people were going to get a show. I knew that I was going to give them the best of me. And that's what happened. That was one of the better sets that I've had in my almost 10-year career as a comic, to where it was just, I just had a lot of fun with them. And it's one of those, like, it's one of those turning points. And it was a lot of fun. I had a great time. There were a lot of people that I knew that were in the audience. So that was kind of, and I don't think they knew me in the way that they ended up knowing me at the end of my set. But I had a great time. It was a lot of fun. I did forget a bit that I wanted to do, like a chunk of new material that I wanted to do. But it was on a Sunday. I was like, y'all got to go to work. And I'm not going to belabor you guys anymore. But thank you to everybody that came out. Thanks to James Camacho for emceeing, Ariel Leaty for doing a guest spot, and the homie Courtney Farrington for featuring. And it was a good night. It was fun. I had prior to that, I had emceed for Steve Byrne, so I did 5 shows with him, and then this last one headlined, and it was 6 shows, and I was just like, ah, man. So that was a really good, that was a great ending to a weekend, and then a great start for me. Headlining, had an audition that was really cool, that I had to prep for. And it's cool because this one, if I was to get this one, it would be like with one Oscar winner and a multiple Oscar nominee. And one of them was who I've called her a generational great number of times and gushed over her talent. And I'm not going to say it or anything. If you listen to the show, you know who I'm talking about. I'm not going to jinx it or anything. But let's just say it would be dope to be in the same scene with those two actors. And that would be fucking awesome. But so I did that. And then I came up here for the shows at City Steam. I'll give you I'll talk about one movie, and then I'll get you to Andy. So on my way up here, I will talk about two movies, and then we'll get you to Andy. All right, so this is what it is. All right, so you know me, if you listen to this pod long enough, you know that I like to get to the town that I'm performing in when I'm doing the road, and I like to go to a movie and just relax before a show. And that's what I did. So I got up here early around noon, and I went to a 1 o'clock screening of Mid-90s at the AMC in Plainville, Connecticut. And I had been to this movie theater earlier in the year, I think, when I did this gig in Middletown. It wasn't when I was at City Steam, but it was at, or like 7 months prior. It was a gig, like, I think during the summertime. I forget what I saw. I saw Hereditary. It was like April of last year. When did this fucking movie? I can actually tell you. I have the internet. Hereditary movie. I was like, oh, how do I spell this? When did this come out? Like June. So it was like early summer. Yeah. So I went there. It's a nice theater. It's a nice AMC. It's like one of those AMCs that got renovated. And it's kind of like in a small town, and it got renovated, which leads me to which just makes me say, come on, AMC Garden State. Why can't you get the reclining seats? These other theaters are stepping their game up. You can do it too. AMC at the Garden State Plaza Mall is... Garden State Plaza is the biggest mall in New Jersey. And step your game up. I'm a movie snob. Yeah. Yeah, I am. I'm embracing that, being a movie snob. So I go to see Mid-90s. I'll read you the blurb about it. All right. In 1990s Los Angeles, 13-year-old Stevie escapes his turbulent home life by hanging out with a group of friends he meets at a local skate shop, plunging him into a world of fun, danger, and excitement. You could also, this movie was written and directed by Jonah Hill, his directorial debut, and you could call this movie Andy Klein Learns to Skate, because this kid, this main kid, looks exactly like, He looks kind of like a young Andy Klein, Sonny Soljic. He definitely looks like a young Andy Klein. And this is it's a good movie. It's definitely a coming of age story. Does it have heart to it? Yeah, it does have heart to it, because there's one really good scene where it's like, yeah, this is when you kind of get to the core of what's going on here, and explains why certain characters are the way that they are. And I like the fact that this movie, it explains some stuff, but it didn't go into too much. It just showed us. Why does it sound like something's like rattling? Like it's an earthquake or something. That's weird. Okay, I'm just going to try to fight through it. Is that like a radiator or something? Anyway, it's a good movie. It's just like a really good coming of age story, and it's interesting because I know a lot of people say, oh, it's the 90s. I've seen Jonah Hill talk about it on a lot of shows like The Breakfast Club and Genius and a lot of these urban shows. And it's a good movie. It's a really good coming of age story. And I was saying before this mini earthquake or whatever the fuck this thing is, there was like, they showed us a lot of things. It wasn't hammer fisted. The storytelling wasn't ham fisted where it's like, this thing is happening. This is a moment that you should pay attention to. It's just very subtle, very slice of life, capturing the behavior of these kids. And, I really dug it. It's a really good companion piece to eighth grade. It's something that kids, young kids, I would say should watch. It's definitely, on the Patreon episode, I talked a little bit about The Hate U Give and Monsters and Men, and made those two, put those movies together and kind of compared and contrasted a little bit. But this is definitely a great companion piece to watch with eighth grade. And if you're a young kid, should watch these two movies. Cause around 95, Kids came out, and that was like intense. That was kids just like wilding out. This one, not so much, but there was a lot of danger in mid 90s. There's a part of eighth grade. There's one moment in particular that was really scary and fucked up, to where there was definitely clear and present danger that was like, oh fuck. That definitely put me on edge. Where am I going with this? Basically, just see it. See mid 90s. It's good. It's definitely worth seeing. It's good. It's a good movie. You should see it. I liked it. You see that movie and then watch eighth grade. And if you have kids, you know, it might be a good one to see. And definitely, because when I was talking about The Hate U Give, one of my coworkers asked me about it, and he said, is it good for his son to watch? And his son, I think his son is like eighth grade or something. I said, yeah, definitely. Because the movie's made for him. It's made for a kid to see. And I think what I didn't say in the on the Patreon episode, it's basically one is for kids, is mainly geared towards young adults because it's from a young adult novel. And the other, like The Hate U Give, is a young adult novel. And Monsters and Men is more of a grown up type film, even though, you know, if you're a kid, you could see that too. And it's dealing with the same thing. I'm going to give you another movie review. I'm going to talk about another movie real quick. Beautiful Boy. This movie stars Timothy Chalamet and Steve Carell and Amy Ryan and Maura Tierney. This movie, teenager Nicholas Sheff seems to have it all. Good grades, editor of the school newspaper, actor, artist, and athlete. When Nick's addiction to meth threatens to destroy him, his desperate father does whatever he can do to save his son and family. So this is funny because I had made a little guest phone in to Three Guys On last week. And Dominic, who was on the show, had asked Dominic Rivera, who was on the show, had asked me what I had I seen it yet or what did I think? And I was like, oh, this is shit. It's just like, I'm sure it's good, but it's just like white people saying drugs are bad because it's an epidemic and because white people are dying and getting addicted to drugs. Now it's a big issue. And I was bitching about that on the show. And it kind of, this was based on a true story. And I kind of felt that way, but it definitely was, I don't know, triggering has like a negative connotation to it. It made me think about stuff in my family. If you're lucky, you don't have someone that's suffering from addiction in your family, but I've had that. It's commonplace. So you're lucky if you didn't. But it definitely reminded me of a cousin that I had who's now no longer with us. And I don't want to get into too much of it because it's not really my story to tell on a podcast. But I might have alluded to it or mentioned it before. But all I just say is like my cousin was a sweet guy, probably one of the sweetest people that I had ever met. And he just got caught up on that shit. And then some of those life decisions led to him being murdered, but he was a fucking sweet guy. And that's kind of what this is. And you've got terrific acting from Steve Carell and Timothy Chalamet. Everybody in the cast is great, but these two guys are holding it down. And it's a good ass movie. It was long. It's a long one too. So this is another theater story. So I went to see this in Hartford or whatever at the Bowtie Palace and BTX. And it's supposed to start at 10:35 a.m. and it's like 10:40 and all there is a green screen. And I had to go into the lobby and get the nice lady at the concession stand to radio in for them to start the fucking movie. Because if they didn't, we would still be sitting in there waiting for the fucking movie to start. And I think it's one of those, like, this was like in theater 15 and they have 17 theaters. So this was like one where it was just kind of like, nobody's going to see this art house movie. So there were like six people in there, me, myself included. And it was just sort of like, just start this fucking thing. And they started it, but it ended. Yeah. It was like, this was it. And what am I saying? It was just long. How long is this movie? It was 2 hours, but it felt a lot longer. And it was just kind of like what it was. It was definitely pretty harrowing, and it's not the easiest watch. Anne Hornaday. This looks like this is. She says, "Beautiful Boy is a painful, frustrating, sometimes infuriating depiction of helplessness, even passivity, as a life full of potential circles the drain." Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, these were great performances, but this is a movie that you don't, if you feel like it's going to be triggering to you, then I would say maybe don't see it in the theater or it's not something that you might want to see if you're not in the mood for it. But I wanted to check it out, and I knew this was probably gonna affect me in some kind of way, and I kind of want to talk to my parents about it, just because sometimes when I talk to them they kind of add like more perspective on it, because it's just definitely one of those things that can be a conversation starter, and it made me think about my life. So it's one of those, it's a good movie, terrific acting, you know, but it's definitely, for lack of a better term, triggering, thought provoking, not as fucked up as Requiem for a Dream. 'Cause that wasn't based on a true story. That was kind of highly stylized, even though it was a great movie. But yeah, I just wanted to mention that because I was like, it's all this. Like, you can hear me bitching on that Patreon episode of Three Guys Zone. I was like, it's just going to be like all this stuff just because now white people are getting sick and dying. Now it's a problem. But even though all the black people had drug addiction and they're dying, nobody gives a fuck. I kind of went on a mini rant, and rightfully so. I wasn't lying. But Beautiful Boy, good movie, good acting. What more could you want? But if you're in the mood to see a kid with all this potential be at his wit's end and be on drugs, then go for it. It's something I did at 10:30 in the morning on a Saturday, on a rainy Saturday nonetheless. So, okay. All right. Let's get you to Andy. So Andy and I had a conversation. This was Wednesday of last week. And we talked a little bit about Megyn Kelly right before they canceled her show, or she decided to give up her show and all that jazz. And we had a great conversation. Always like to talk shop with Andy. Always like to check in with him about sports and stuff. We didn't talk about the Wizards this time, but it's too early in the season. So maybe we'll have him back on later in the year, maybe like early next year, and rap with him about that. But it's always a great time talking to Andy. And here is evidence of that with Andy Klein and yours truly shooting the shit. Enjoy. My phone has just been really sensitive. I think it's getting jealous because I'm looking at shit on YouTube about new phones.
What kind of phone you have?
I have a Samsung Galaxy S7 Edge.
So do I. My phone is starting to die. It's about 2 years old.
Mine is 2 years old. I finished paying for it earlier in the year, and I've noticed where it's been going kind of slow when I'm trying to do the maps, and I don't know.
Yeah, especially with Google Maps goes super slow.
Yeah,
on my phone, it's like searched for GPS for too long.
Mm-hmm.
It hesitates to get hung up. I downloaded Waze to see if it's just the app or the phone the problem. But I haven't started using Waze yet just to see, because I thought it might be the app itself that's just fucking up. But
yeah,
my phone's like almost exactly 2 years ago I bought it, and the last like maybe month been like just freezing for no apparent reason. You know, just it's like they know it's 2 years old and they send some kind of message to your phone to start fucking up. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Because I've been looking at I still like Android, and because I've. This would be, maybe I've had Android for about 4 years now, and I've liked it,
yeah.
And I haven't had any problems with them. And I do like what I've been seeing with the, the Thin Q, with the LG phones look pretty good. Someone had I have AT&T, so I can't get the Google phone, the Pixel. Someone took a picture and it looked amazing. I was like, Jesus Christ, that's incredible. But
yeah, like imagine how many more Instagram likes you would get if you had a Pixel.
I know. So
you're leaving hundreds of likes on the table.
I know.
Not going over to Verizon.
And no monetary gain.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, how can you become an influencer if you don't have a Pixel?
That shit just seems so daunting. I can't. I don't know that's ever going to be me. Getting 1,500 likes for me taking a picture of a puppy or just saying, hey,
no,
you know, look at this cheeseburger I ate.
You got to be either like a hot girl, or if you're a dude, you got to have a neck tattoo and wear jogging pants or joggers or whatever. Like, they all fucking look the same, you know, it's the same. It's the same content.
Yeah.
Among all those influencers. And then there's the comedic ones who it's just irony and sarcasm. There's like no content beyond irony and sarcasm.
Yeah, like people that do all those videos and stuff and get. I did a TV show in Pittsburgh a couple months ago, and there was a guy that I was hanging out with because we had our costume fittings on the same day, and he was taking Uber everywhere. And I was like, dude, you can't do that shit. And he's a black actor, so I can't just be like a hashtag guy. I have to, you know, really put that into action. So I gave him a ride from where we were at and shit. Anyway, he had like thousands of followers. Like, I've never even heard of this kid, and he's got all these followers, and it's just crazy. And it's
what did you look at his content? Like, what was he doing?
He was making videos of just him talking. It's something about videos that kind of creep me out a little bit on Instagram. Just seeing your friends in the video. Hey, man, I'm at Applebee's. I don't know. It's just kind of weird. And then I feel like I feel like a creep looking at some of these girls' their Instagram stories. I don't know.
Yeah, I only recently started even checking stories. I was like, I've resisted stories for a long time. At some point, I was like, wonder what I'm missing.
Yeah.
And it's just nothing. It's nothing.
You're not missing much.
No. It's just desperation. It's like, please like me. Please like this.
Yeah.
Please validate me. And then I don't really get too deep. Like, I know there's some people, their whole Instagram feed is just asses shaking.
Yeah.
You know, like they make it about one thing, and I don't really, again, even like just putting in the effort to curate my feed on Instagram, I haven't even bothered.
Yeah. I think maybe it's 'cause we're too old.
Yeah, there's a fatigue factor too. It's like, to someone who's 20, they've been on social media for like, you know,
forever.
5, 6 years.
Yeah.
5, 6, 7 years. Where like I've been on social media for longer than that. So I might be more sick of it than someone who's new to it.
Yeah.
You know? And not true. That I was ever all that active, but probably MySpace was the first social media website that I was on, and that was what, 2005 maybe?
Something like that, yeah.
And so at some point, it's just like, yeah, I get it. I get it. And then, but then I keep coming back to it because there is something I'm getting out of it, obviously.
Right.
Even if it's just getting informed about stuff or, you know, checking up on all the New York comedy drama or whatever it might be. Or the Baltimore comedy drama. There's a lot of drama in Baltimore. But, like, I get something out of it. But there's a certain point where I'm just like, oh, all right, enough. And maybe if I was only 6 years into social media, I wouldn't be that way. But the appetite for it starts to go away, you know?
Yeah. Mainly it's like, you're definitely finding out about drama, who got canceled for the day.
Yeah.
Like, maybe I should delete my tweets.
That's the thing about, like, Facebook memories. Like, I will delete a post from 2011 sometimes. I'll check Facebook memories.
Yeah.
But I don't do time hop. I should do it for Twitter too, because, you know, Twitter doesn't have a memories feature.
Right.
But time hop was always the way, that was the first thing that sort of, Facebook just gobbles up whatever is hot. But time hop's like, check this out. And Facebook's like, yeah, we'll just make that a feature. Mm-hmm. You know, same with like stories and all that. But yeah, I'll do that. I'll delete a tweet. Sometimes I just won't like the joke. I'll be like, oh, that was a dumb joke. Why did I post that? Fuck that, you know? And then other times I'm like, that's borderline a problem. So let me just, I don't need these things from 2011 to be up anyway. So
just delete them. I need to do the same thing. I need to delete a lot of shit.
Because if I become an influencer, you know, I don't want someone like, you know, putting on the snorkel and diving into my social media feed. Like, I want to become offended.
Yeah.
Just scrolling for 2 hours until I find something.
Yeah. Now, I got to ask you, has it become easier for you to watch football now that your Washington racial slurs are at the top of the NFC?
No.
Okay.
And I think I might be over the tipping point on that.
On football?
I still watch. Yeah, a little bit. Mm-hmm. Again, maybe it's kind of like, maybe I'm just fatigued about all the shit that I used to be into. Maybe it's not a social media thing, but football, I'm not like boycotting it or anything, but probably like 3 years ago, I started noticing I was less interested, you know?
Yeah.
Like the game would be on. Like I still used to watch every Redskins game and like literally not even miss a play. That's why I wouldn't go to someone else's house to watch, because they might, like, you know, change the channel, or they might just be talking and you miss a play. I'd watch every play. Even if they were getting blown out, I'd sit there and watch every play. But I started noticing I'd start losing interest. You know, I'd pull out my phone and start looking at Twitter or something during the game. And then to the point where then I started like just, you know, watching half a game, you know what I mean? Or just, you know, not really watching the whole game and or recording it and watching it later. Then you can fast forward and skip a lot of it.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, this season I've watched, like I watched the whole game. Was it last week against the Cowboys? I watched that one. The week before, I didn't watch any of it. I watched literally not one play, like maybe two highlights, and that's it. And I don't miss it. That's the thing. It's the thing with the boycott, too. I said this on our podcast. The problem the NFL is going to have is when people do start sitting out of watching, and then once they realize they don't miss it, that's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not going to come back, you know?
Right.
But with the Redskins, it's like, also, they suck. I mean, I don't trust. They're 4-2 now, but I don't trust it. They've been 7-1 before and went 8-8. So, like, it's 4-2 is nice and all, but I don't trust any of that. Dan Snyder is like a Trump guy. You know, he gave $1 million to Trump's inauguration fun party or whatever. And just the way they built people out of money and all, it's just the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, and the concussions and the Kaepernick thing and everything, just like the last 3 years, I've just been sort of down on it. Now, if they were like a dominant team, maybe I would look past all the other shit, but they've been terrible for 20 years. So it's easy to just say, all right, I'm going to just step away and be a casual fan for the first time in my life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm
kind of worth that.
I feel like I've been a casual fan for quite some time. Even though, for the most part, on Sundays when I'm relaxing, I will have Red Zone on, but I'm just not. It's been like that for, I think since I started stand-up, it's been like that, at least since then. And when Dominic told me that I was lame for doing theater instead of watching football, it it may have been around that time, like 2005. Even though I would always watch the Super Bowl, I'd know I had more of an interest in the players, and I think it stemmed from me, you know, the listeners know that, you know, ever since I was a kid, I knew that farm system of the NCAA from those guys being in college, going into the league, and I don't have that anymore. So that's a huge foundation that's taken away. I'm not playing NCAA football anymore because it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And I'm not buying that big almanac for all those players. So I don't know who a lot of these guys are. And it's just been sort of like, it's kind of boring. And then the product's not that good.
Although this year, I mean, there's been, I think it's the first time in history, there's been, I think, 7 straight weeks where there's been an overtime game.
Yeah.
Like, there have been a lot of close games this year. I'm just like, so, you know, that's cool.
Yeah.
Shrug. And plus, then basketball starts.
Yeah, basketball.
I'm probably as into or more into basketball now than ever before, but I've been into basketball for a long time, but it's never replaced football.
Right.
But now I feel like it sort of is.
Yeah, I was talking to a guy the other day. I was like, would you let your son play football? And he said, hell no. You know, just
right.
Soccer. I think, I forget who I was talking to, but yeah, it was just like, no, I'm not letting my kid play. It's just that it's not the same anymore. It's kind of sad a little bit, but I guess when you just replace that obsession with something else.
Right.
But I don't mind it though. I did hang out with a buddy, on a Saturday night and watched the first, we went to Hooters and watched a football game, college football, because he went to Colorado and he was the only person yelling in the bar about the game. And it was just, it was just like, oh, this is cool to watch it, but I don't know these kids. So it's just not the same.
I feel like when I was closer in age to college kids, I was more into college sports.
Yeah.
You know, for whatever reason, I had friends who were maybe in some of those schools, still attending them. You know, it was like, it felt closer.
Right.
But without that, I've never really been to college football, but college basketball, I was pretty big into it for a long time.
Yeah, I never went to a college football game. I was minutes away from really a train, maybe a half an hour train ride away from Northwestern. That's a Big Ten school, but I never really went. I never did go.
I went to the theater, you know.
I was into the arts.
Studying your lines.
Yeah, learning my lines. Yeah, so I don't know, man. It's just one of those things. But if my boss, no, I did go to a game. I did go to a game 2 years ago. It was a Monday night game. That was pretty fun because the Giants played the Bengals, and I got to see Odell and I got to see AJ Green, and you could just kind of watch, you know, great players do what they do. So it's I appreciated it, but then yeah. You gotta go out. It's cold. It's
right.
You gotta pay for parking. You don't. I didn't have to pay for parking because she gave me a pass. But it's just the act of going there is kind of a chore now. It's always been, even though I will say one of the most efficient parking situation. Like you can get in and out. Like leaving that stadium, even if you leave during the fourth quarter or something,
yeah,
it's pretty efficient, which I was surprised for it to be a stadium in the tri-state area. I was impressed.
Yeah. That's the issue with Redskins games, too. It's a nightmare getting in and out. Like, it takes your whole day out. You can't just go to the game and come home.
Because those people...
You go to a 1 o'clock game, you get home at 7. You have to leave the house at 10 a.m., you know?
Jesus Christ.
Yeah,
I used to worry about that going home. I would try to beat the traffic when the Redskins had a home game, that traffic around Landover when I leave my parents' house to come back up here. It's pretty brutal. What do you think about this time of year where it's, I don't know, it's like the most wonderful time to be black and trolled by blackface stuff every year? Like people, I didn't know. Like,
yeah, I don't get that. Like, how do you not know? First of all, there's two things. One, you either are lying,
mm-hmm.
and you do know, or you do know you don't care, basically. Or two, you actually don't know, but people have probably told you.
Yeah.
You know, if you're like, I mean, Megyn Kelly's 47 years old. Like, it had to have come up at some point, and you just don't believe them. That's a big part of kind of the racism dynamic is, hey, we've been telling you this for years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and just not listening. Just like, oh, whatever, not true.
It's just It's just the gaslighting. It's just so. Megyn Kelly was only doing her job, Andy. They moved. Didn't they move Roker and what's my girl? Oh man, what's the black girl with the short hair? Oh my god!
On NBC?
Yeah, Tamron Hall.
Black girl short. Oh, Tamron Hall. Okay.
Like, yeah. Weren't they doing? Wasn't she doing something? And I don't know that they demoted her, but they gave her. Megyn Kelly, like, a high-profile spot to do what she's doing.
Yeah, they definitely, like, made room for Megyn Kelly.
Yeah.
Like they put all their chips in the middle. Like, this is the one. You know, like people love Megyn Kelly. And no one loved Megyn Kelly. Like, she's at least not as a personality. It wasn't like Katie Couric, where it's like, wow, she's so bubbly and she's overflowing with personality.
Right.
Megyn Kelly, when she was on Fox, was like... kind of like icy, and she wasn't like a personality. No one cared about what she had to say about anything.
She's prettier than what's her name?
And what? Not prettier than Tamron Hall.
No. prettier than what's the skinny girl? The girl that's like, oh, Trump's okay.
The girl on Fox.
Yeah. Oh my God. What is her name? She goes on Race War. Coulter.
Oh, Coulter, yeah. Well, she's... Yeah, Coulter... Cults are like 15 years ago was kind of like that average girl who moves to a small town, so she's hot now.
Mm-hmm.
And then Fox just got a bunch of better-looking cults.
Yeah.
You know, so she's just now the shrill kind of big child, crazy everybody. But there was a time when people were touting Coulter as like being attractive. I remember that.
Really?
Yeah, like she's not bad.
She's not bad, dude.
She's not bad. She's all right.
Huh.
So I don't know, maybe like in the realm of cable news 12, 14 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but Megyn Kelly was never even like an opinion person. I mean, she had a show where she would occasionally spout off an opinion, but it would be stupid. Like she wouldn't have any really good in-depth, insightful opinion.
Yeah,
when they brought her over to give her morning show or whatever it is on NBC, it's like, well, she's not a personality, you know?
Yeah. I just know her
and
as...
And she's just...
Go ahead.
She's just dumb. She's just not very smart. I mean, I know she's a lawyer, but when it comes to, like, just regular, I guess, everyday sort of, I wouldn't say street smarts, but just general knowledge, she seems to be, like, clueless about a lot of stuff.
Do you think, though, that it's an act? I feel like a lot of this shit is pro wrestling, and I've been saying this before Trump, before, you know, even when Obama was president. Like, a lot of this stuff, these pundits, like, I would tell Randolph, it's just like, say, or I'll use the example with you. You and I are picking, you're conservative, and I'm, or even I'm conservative, and you're liberal. And you and I can go on a show, well, Andy, I think you're wrong. Chris, I think you're wrong. And we're heated in a heated debate. After the cameras go off, we go eat steaks. We're at the Palm hanging out.
Yeah, I think there's definitely that element where it's just like I'm playing a part. I'm learning my lines.
Yeah.
And this is my role tonight. I'm a head in the box on the left of the screen. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a head in a box on the right of the screen, and they're going to disagree. I'm going to roll my eyes, and maybe we'll go viral. And I think even if they're not, they might be, like, legitimately ideologically opposed.
Right.
Like, not acting so much. Maybe exaggerating a bit because they're on TV. But I think they are sort of, you know, kicking each other under the table.
Yeah.
I think Bill Maher does that with, like, Ann Coulter and stuff. It's all just kind of... You can tell it's kind of a game to them, even if they legitimately believe that stuff.
Yeah.
It's just kind of an abstraction. It's like, yeah, this is sports for us. Like, we're gonna go debate, and you might win, I might win, we'll keep score, and then we'll shake hands at the end. And for a lot of people, like, their opinions get shaped by these people.
Exactly. And that's where the danger is, because we're the ones who are really affected by the changes that get made. If you're rich... You and I are rich, then it's like we don't give a shit what happens to other people.
Right.
We're still rich.
The consequences aren't really there. And then it's just it's a competition. It's like a race to the bottom because it's like, oh, he said some crazy shit. Well, I'm going to say some crazier shit because he's getting booked more than me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And people just kind of, they try to make their name by saying the most outrageous shit. Some of it they do believe, but I think there's an element of it where they don't. I mean, I mean, Randolph talked about it. We know someone who worked at a conservative publication, and this person's boss was liberal, but would tell them, hey, write about this, write an article about this. It'll be like a conservative thing. Just, this is my job. I'm on the clock. You know, I clocked in. I'm going to push this conservative agenda so I can get a paycheck. I'm going to go home, but I don't believe in any of it. And it's just a job to a lot of people.
Yes. It's just kind of weird to me. I don't know that I could do that. I'm not sure.
No, I couldn't.
I'm not sure if I could do that. Cause you are affecting people in that way. Not to say I'm a good person, Andy, but it's just like that weird that I don't know.
Well, every now and then, like you become, especially if you're like, you know, the black conservative or whatever, people do start to tokenize you no matter what.
There's, so it's not, there's just money, like, in it. There's a lot of money in it.
Yeah, there's a lot of money in it, and there's more money in it if you're willing to let yourself be tokenized, you know, to that extreme level. And then, you know, the Candace Owens kind of shit, like, she's probably the most visible, like, extreme example of that at this point.
Because Stacey Dash got too old.
Yeah, she aged out. She turned into Ann Coulter.
Yeah.
And Candace Owens is like 29 years old. And it doesn't matter that you can transparently find out that she didn't used to be this way. And she made an obvious cynical turn to be conservative to get on TV and shit. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter to her audience. But at some point, she becomes a tool for people.
Yeah.
You know, people who can say, I'm not racist. I love Candace Owens. She's fine with that, evidently.
Right.
You know, so, but then there's also that you kind of lose yourself and you just become a mascot for this, for people who don't really like you.
And she is cute. She looks She looks like Tangi Miller, this actress that was on Felicity. She was Felicity's black friend.
Okay.
But when I auditioned for Murphy Brown, there was the scene that I was in was supposed to be and take place in Buffalo, and there were people that were, you know, for or against this Steve Bannon like character. And I originally auditioned. Did you see the scene?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
Thanks for the fucking support, Andy.
Anyway, I don't watch television.
I know you don't. But there was a scene. There's a scene where I auditioned to play this plumber, who was like, oh, I like the guy because he's trying to drain the swamp and he's trying to do this X, Y, and Z, and I'm a working man. And when I got the sides for it, I was like, I can do this. I get what I get the angle that they're going for. And if I'm black, I can play this because this is a real thing, but it is kind of weird.
Yeah.
And so then I read for another role to be a guy that was against the plumber guy and against the Shannon character, Shannon Bannon, obviously. And so they ended up casting a white guy to play the plumber, a black woman to play somebody that opposes the plumber character, and then me, a black guy who was against the plumber and the Steve Bannon character. And so I think it just happened the way that they ended up casting it. But I could have done, not to say like, I could have did that part, but it wouldn't have been like so far-fetched if it was a black person doing that. Because I even told the casting director, I said, I get it, I could do it because that exists. It is more money to be in a turncoat, like a Whitlock character, so you can be held up as the example of that you're quote unquote one of the good ones.
Yeah, and I wonder how much I think Whitlock actually feels that way.
I think he does.
But I wonder how much of it he's where he sort of turns up a little bit just to needle at people and get more attention, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Ultimately, what's the difference? Like, if you're faking it or if you're actually that person, to the people hearing you, what's the difference?
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, it's crazy. And then the bomb threats, it's like Rod said on Facebook and Twitter today, he lays this all at Trump's feet. And I get it. I mean, it's there are people that are saying on Twitter that, you know, when one guy, a reporter said, when I covered Trump's rallies, there were people that said they wanted to kill the opposition. And he's been at the forefront of all of this hate, Andy.
Well, and he comes up. I mean, we're recording what the day it happened.
Yes, October 24th.
Yeah, and so it's probably all the info isn't even out there yet. But Trump came out and he said, clearly it's one of those things where whenever Trump is trying to be sincere, it's like he's reading a hostage letter. You know?
Yeah.
He's clearly like has been sort of pushed into this, and he's doing a rally tonight, and I'm sure the real Trump will come out, and there are probably going to be reports of people yelling, bomb them, you know, in the crowd or whatever. But he comes out, and he's like, violent political rhetoric of any kind shouldn't be allowed. And I'm like, of any kind? Like, because he obviously, you know, he doesn't ever say bomb people, but he does say punch them and rough them up and
right.
Lock her up and all that. Like, if you're saying of any kind, like, if he would have just said of this kind, like, that's one thing. But he said of any kind. I was like, well, that comes from you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if he's self-aware enough to know that because he's an idiot, but all the people around him know that.
Yeah.
You know, his kids know that. Sarah Sanders knows that. And John Kelly knows that. And they're all giving him cover anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
Right.
And the people who are sort of stockpiling because Trump has made them fearful enough to do that, again, it doesn't matter how sincere he's being. They know, I feel like they know that he's been pushed out there to read a hostage letter, and they don't believe it anyway when he calls for civility.
Right.
I think they feel like he's just doing what he's got to do.
Yeah, yeah, and it's almost like he's changing from moment to moment or whatever he feels the situation calls for. He's going to be a chameleon in that way. But then when you get to those rallies, that's when the true colors come out. And it's just like he's still doing these rallies.
Well, that's the narcissism, too. It's whatever makes me look the best in this moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't really matter if it's consistent with the previous moments or the upcoming moments. It's when, like, right now, I'll look the best if I walk out there and say, we will not tolerate violence of any kind and civility and all that stuff. And then, like, later tonight at the rally, he has that look in his eye. We've all seen that look. Any comic has seen that look when the crowd really laughs and cheers. And you're like, ah, I'm going to riff on this.
Yeah.
You know, and you want to, like, milk that for as much as you can. He has that look in his eye. Sarah Palin had that same look.
Right.
You could see her saying something and then, like, getting that little glee on her face from the crowd cheering for her. And I've seen comics do that. I've seen comics go out there and tell a dumb dick joke, and then the crowd, like, loses their shit.
Mm-hmm.
And then next thing you know, they're humping the stool, you know? So if humping the stool will get him a cheer, he'll do it.
It's so funny. I was working with a young comic this weekend, and he was doing a guest spot. And it was two shows on Saturday, and I was emceeing, and so I brought him up, and he came up, and he called. He said, oh, this is, can he, fuck, I'm going to have to say the guy's race, shit. Try not to say the person's race. Shit. So, basically, he did get some laughs. He was funny. He's like, young, a young comic, like 24 years old, because I was talking to him backstage.
And
we were talking. I was like, yeah, blah, blah, blah. And I, you know, just, oh, where you get up? Oh, that's cool, blah, blah, blah. And then he calls me, oh, give it up for Stanley from The Office. And I was like, God damn it. I just bonded with you. You call me Stanley from The Office? I was like, I know I'm a big guy, but Jesus, you could have called me Daryl. So when I got back up on stage, I said, Jesus, man, Stanley, you know, like to get that first laugh. And then I was like, I could go with Daryl. He's younger. He's a little more handsome, you know?
Yeah.
But then I noticed when he was on stage, like he was only doing like 7 minutes, or 8 minutes. And then at one point he was sitting on the stool and drinking water. Do you need water during an 8 minute set?
Right.
I was like, oh, man. And he got that. And then he was doing well on the second night we worked together. And I could see him like, yeah. And I was listening to David Cross. I know he's problematic. But he was on Sam and Jim. And it was on YouTube or whatever. And he was saying when he first started out, he was like 17 years old. And he murdered the first time that he was on stage. And he said that was the worst thing to ever happen to him, because he said he spent a year just bombing.
Yeah.
And that makes me think about what you said about Trump. Just sort of like, he gets that glimmer in his eye because he's still.
Yeah, new. He will not bomb. If he can avoid it, whatever he's saying, if it's not working, he'll just bail on that bit, you know, and just go to the next thing. And so, what do you guys want to talk about? Bombing brown people? Cool. And he'll just start doing that.
Yeah.
And if that's not, and then ultimately, if he does bomb, he'll just claim that he killed, which is another like open micer thing. Like, man, everybody crushed last night. We all crushed. I crushed.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's not really, doesn't live in reality. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just whatever makes him look the best, he's going to do it, which, you know, might include literally dropping bombs on brown people. You know, yeah. If he feels like that'll get him the most cheers, the most positive attention. He does seem to thrive on haters also.
Mm-hmm.
Because the more haters you have, the louder your people will cheer.
Right.
Because they want to drown out the haters. So, you know, and he's getting played by all the other world leaders there. You know, he's easy to figure out.
Yeah.
But whatever it takes, if he goes to a rally and then if he says, the fucking caravan, he didn't even say terrorist. He just said Middle Easterners. You know, he just said unknown Middle Easterners. Oh, like, what does that even? Or like, you know, he's a guy who claims that he wasn't banning Muslims, and they just, there might even be people from the Middle East in this caravan. The crowd's like, oh shit, not people from the Middle East.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just whatever it takes to make those idiots cheer, and they're all dumb too.
Right.
You know.
Now he's going to change things.
Well, and people aren't, they're becoming more open to the idea, but they're still a little hesitant to just say these are idiots and say it out loud because they don't want to, it's weird, they don't want to piss them off.
Right.
Or be insensitive, but like, they're already pissed off. And who cares if you're insensitive? They're going to be insensitive back to you no matter what you say. So this idea of like lead by example with your civility is stupid.
How is the climate? We're 2 years in now. How is it affecting your stand up? Or has it been a progression that where you? I mean, I saw your clip you posted about Kavanaugh, like about a month or so ago. Is that a reaction? Do you, because you talk about political things, but I think with that one, that set part of your set, there's just more, I guess, specificity about.
Yeah, well, that was like a topical, like I wrote that like on a Wednesday and I recorded it on Saturday and I posted it.
Yeah.
You know, posted on Sunday. And I was like, well, I got like this 3 minute thing about Brett Kavanaugh. This is before the vote, I think.
Okay.
And so he had testified. It was like on the heels of his him and Dr. Ford testifying. I wrote these jokes. A couple of them, you know, it's one of the things where I posted something on Facebook. I was like, that could be a bit.
Right.
You know. And so that was very topical. I was like, this is not going to be, people aren't going to laugh at this in 2 weeks, which I bet part of it they would if I still did it. But I do have more of those moments now where I'm just like writing a bit, going on stage because it's super topical.
Yeah.
Doing it for a couple weeks, 3 weeks, and it starts to fizzle out. And either trying to find a way to make it more broad so it's not so topical or just dropping it, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't want to be like a topical comic or a political comic necessarily. But that's just what I'm consuming all the time. And maybe I should stop consuming so much, you know, news or whatever. But you regurgitate what happens to you. So
yeah. I don't think there's anything wrong with it.
No, there's nothing wrong with it. It's just I always kind of feel like I don't want to just write bits that I can't use in a month over and over again. But on the other hand, it's a good exercise to be able to just take something that happened today in the news and write 3 minutes that kills today. And then, you know, by Saturday, it's like you put it online. There's value in that.
Yeah,
as just a joke writer. To just, I mean, people who write monologues for TV shows. We're doing that every day. They're writing jokes, reading the paper, you know, or checking the website, and just writing jokes. So,
because it seems almost effortless for you when I watch you do it, because it doesn't seem like it's belabored or anything. Like, I sent you a couple months ago, I sent you a clip of this one of my favorite rappers, Evidence. And I was like, that guy reminds me of Andy. It's just like he's not because he's like not black, but it's because he's really good, and it's just there's no like his flow is just like just so in the pocket to where he's not really like, I'm this and I'm that. He's just like, this is who I am. This is the line. Yeah. This is the rhyme scheme. This is this. The beat is this. And it's just, it's not just like where it's just not to use efficiency as a pejorative, but it's just like, this guy's really fucking good. Like, this guy's good. Like, he's not like bragging about it. He does, as rappers boast and everything, but it's not ostentatious. And that's what I think of, like, when I think of you, where it's like you have, and I think maybe even, I'm trying to think about certain, I can't think of certain tracks off Vintage right now, but just even when you're talking about stuff, your point of view is still there, even though you are not at the fore, you're not like, this is a story about me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's not necessarily personal. It's looking out more than looking in.
Yeah.
And I'm definitely not a self-aggrandizing personality.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't put myself, you know, into a lot of the bits. Although I am doing that more. I'm definitely like just telling the crowd how I feel more than I used to. Just on a night to night, you know, talk about what's going on today kind of thing.
Yeah.
I'll sort of frame it in how it made me feel. But in general, like in terms of rappers, like, even though he does brag a lot, like Black Thought is a guy who sort of, you know, just you forget how good it is because you're just kind of listening. It's kind of deceptive. And you go back and listen like, oh, shit, that was really high quality stuff.
Oh, I never forget how great Black Thought is.
Yeah. It's easy to take for granted.
It's true.
Every verse is good. There's never a flaw.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, he can do whatever he wants on the mic.
Yeah.
Including sing if he wants.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's why people call him underrated, because he doesn't always, until the freestyle, wasn't getting mentioned in those conversations about, like, you know, top 5 or top 10 or whatever. Like, some people would mention him. A lot of people wouldn't even know who he is.
The hipster in me hates that.
Yeah.
It hates. I hate that it took that 10-minute freestyle for people to be like, oh, shit. And maybe, you know, maybe he's not. I've listened to some buddies talk about it on their show or whatever. And I'm just like, he may not be some people's cup of tea, but I think he's the best that ever did it. Like, I don't think there's, I think maybe, yeah, you can, you respect the architect of a guy like Rakim or whoever else you that, you know, laid the foundation. Yes. But when it comes to somebody that can make himself an instrument, basically, what's the song? Is it Boom from the Tipping Point? Is that the one when he did Kool G Rap and Big Daddy Kane? I think he's one of the greats. But you, though, I think you're underrated in the way we're just like, fuck, Andy's good. You know what I mean? Like, just I'm not blowing smoke up your ass, but it's just like, it is what it is.
Well, and I think I've felt that way for sure. I felt like I've always felt this way about my stand up. Like, I think comics like me and respect me. I think the audience likes me. I generally do well with audiences.
Yeah.
But anything above that, anything sort of industry, even low level industry, even like shitty managers or whatever, they don't even know who I am. Like, it's lost on people like that. I've auditioned for Montreal, I've auditioned for things like that, and I'm just a regular white guy wearing a polo shirt. I mean, we've talked about that.
Yes. Yeah.
And And like, which to me, it's like, yeah, man, strip it down, make it all about the content. And the industry is like, yeah, man, dress it up, make yourself a character. So
yeah,
it's sort of, and again, like the Black Thought thing, he's not super introspective. He has a backstory that he could milk if he wants, both of his parents being murdered and all that stuff. And for him, it's more like, no, I'm going to show off my skill here, not muddy it up with other things. I don't know how he feels about it, but for me, I do feel like the people who make decisions on that higher level, part of it is maybe I haven't pushed myself to that level, but when I have exposed myself to anyone, you know, sort of in an industry situation, they don't get it the way comics get it and the way audiences get it, you know, which is why my CD was released independently, because I don't have a record deal. You know, most comics don't, but in general, it's just, you know, Black Thought and The Roots used to be pretty underground, kind of the same deal. It's like the industry was like, okay, you're okay. And they had a record deal, but you're okay, but we don't know how to market you. We don't know where to put you.
Right.
And so, yeah, it's like, yeah, it kind of does get, I feel like, overlooked. I don't feel intimidated by any other comic, you know?
Right.
Even the top-level comics. I feel like, oh, I'm capable of that, too.
Yeah.
And I feel like I show that when I go on stage, but there is an element of being taken for granted when you just kind of show up and do well and don't draw attention to yourself and don't post 5 times before the show, hey, check me out on this show, it's going to be dope. And then 2 days later, post again, man, big shout out to everybody who came out to the show last night or last week. It was so great, man. I killed it.
Hey.
And I don't do that. And I think that's almost a requirement now to do that, because people in the know, in the industry, on the industry side of things, they want to see, they respond to hype. Even if the hype was generated by you,
right?
They're not cynical and saying, oh, he's just talking himself up. They're just hearing that a show went well. And also the other factor, which is never going to happen, but, you know, the build a huge social media following or whatever. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to tweet 40 times a day ever.
But I'm looking at my Twitter timeline. I tweeted because the show was coming up, and then I tweeted a day ago to, I thanked somebody for liking the podcast, and I responded to Sarah Tolomash's tweet about something. I just said, oh, hilarious.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I did headline at my home club, and there were like, maybe 15, if that, people there.
Yeah.
And it was like I told you before we started, it was the set of my life, because there were certain situational things going on that I was like, well, this still has to be, these people have to get a show, and they have to get it from me. They have to get, they're getting all of me tonight. I don't care who the fuck is out there.
Yeah.
And how many people, because I mean, you know, you just have to. And that was a big turning point. Like 2 years ago, I did this bar show, and I called it, I think I've told you and Randolph about it, where it's just sort of like you earn these experience points, like you're playing a role playing game where there's a really tough crowd, they're boisterous, and I had to just, each comic did better than the last one, and they opened them up, and then I had to close. And I had to make them pay attention and turn the situation into something that was going to be better for everybody.
Yeah.
So like you told me before, like the first time you were on the show, if you have that headliner energy, then they will, you're undeniable when you bring that energy to them. So that's something that I've been trying to work on, I really been trying to be, especially when my name's on the fucking ticket or whatever the fuck. Because you regardless of who's there, you want to give them a show.
Yeah. And if you don't have that, like we talked about, if you don't have that gear yet, you haven't quite figured it out.
Yeah.
You got to fake it till you make it. You know, you can sort of carry yourself like a headliner, at least for that hour.
Yeah.
And the crowd will hopefully buy it, you know? And then, you know, a year later, when you look back at that tape, you're like, oh, I was pretending.
Yeah.
No, I didn't really own the stage. Now I do. And then a year later, you'll look back at that tape and realize you didn't either. But
yeah,
you know, there's a certain element of like taking ownership of the room.
Right.
Which you can only get better at by doing it, even right. by faking it and pretending to do it, you know? Mm-hmm. And this is something I talk about all the time. People don't think about, they think about how to bomb gracefully and how to dig out of a hole and all that stuff, but they don't think about how to kill on command.
Yeah.
You know, they don't try to duplicate. If they have a good set, they don't necessarily think like, how can I duplicate that good set? What did I do right? What element of what I gave that crowd is the thing that works the best for me? And sometimes you have to step out on that limb and swing, you know, try to hit a home run, which means you might strike out. But
yeah,
that's how you learn how to do it, is just by like pretending to be a headliner almost, like pretending to be a big deal.
Yeah.
So you know how that feels. Mm-hmm. And finding something within you that fits that mold and that energy, and then after a while it becomes effortless. Like I tell people all the time, if you watch a show with a host and a feature and a headline, like you go to the Improv or, you know, whatever, Levity Live.
Right.
Most of the time, the feature is louder than the host. Not because they turn their mic up, they just talk louder. And then most of the time, unless the headliner is like, you know, a specifically low energy, like Todd Barry kind of act.
Yeah.
Most of the time, the headliner is louder than the feature. And it's because they project more energy. They project, even if they're low energy, they project more authority.
Right.
Over the room, because they're just more experienced and they're trying to own it more than the MC. It's pretty tangible when you watch it. You can tell, like, just the volume of how loud people are speaking.
One of the best compliments that I got was over this weekend, where the GM said, you know, Chris, he's a young guy. He said, you know, Chris, when you're hosting, people listen to you. Like, yeah. A lot of times when they're hosting, people are eating, they're trying to get situated, you know, they just got there, but they're listening to you. And I kind of had, like, I have the most anxiety when I'm hosting.
Yeah.
Because it's just like, what the fuck am I going to talk about? Am I going to do material? I don't want to. I'm back at this club. It's in my head where it's just like, the staff knows my jokes, so I got to try to do something different.
Yeah.
And I have to be more present. And then, like, I think it was Saturday, it might have been Friday, there was this married couple that comes to a lot of the show. Like, I think they're basically VIP, where they come. And I was just, it was, so this is a two-part thing, actually a three-part thing. And so they said, oh, yeah, we loved you. You're great. We've seen you a couple times, and it's always different every time we see you. Even if sometimes the jokes are the same, they might be different, put in a different place, or the audience. You know, they were explaining it in their layman's terms to, you know, what. And I was like, oh, wow. I was like, oh, that means, I said, okay, that means a lot, coming from people that come here and have seen me more than once. And and Greg Stone was featuring. It was Steve Byrne. We were opening for Steve Byrne, Greg Stone, and then me, and that was basically three headliners, technically.
Right.
So people that, even though Greg and I aren't famous, we could headline and do well, and that's what that crowd got that weekend. With people that had that experience and that could do that. Obviously, Steve was great and he took it to another level and everything like that. But that's the quality of that. That was a really good show for people. But I don't know. It's just like, I definitely get anxiety when I host more than headlining. Because I told Aaron Jackson this last month, where I'm just starting to get to the point where I'm not shitting on myself when I have to headline, you know,
right.
Like, there's just like a comfort. There's a comfort where it's like, I can just talk to these people. I can tell these people about my day. I can tell these people about going, you know, like what I ate for breakfast or what I did, the weird thing that happened to me before I came to this show that day.
Right.
And right. And Mark Maron, when you and I worked with Mark Maron, what was that, eight years ago?
That was 2011?
2011.
I think it was 11 or 12, yeah.
It was
at the latest 13, but I think it was
It was 2011.
Yeah.
So he was trying to, because I asked him, I was like, oh, you just talk about your day? He was like, yeah.
Yeah.
And he told me to do it, and I did being into comedy 2 years at the time. And he was like, how did it feel? I was like, yeah, it felt pretty good. But now I have more experience to go along with that. But it's definitely, like, that's kind of where I'm at right now. It's just like, okay, I know I probably won't shit on myself if I close out the show. But if I'm emceeing, like, that's, to me, is, there's a little more anxiety attached to it. Is that weird?
No, I mean, emceeing might be harder for you. There's a lot of comics at that point, once they start doing longer sets, it's harder to do a short set because you get so used to the slow easing into the set. Like, let me just talk about what I did today. Let me kind of get to know the crowd a bit before I even do any material.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're an MC, it's like, I only got 10 minutes and I got to sort of get the crowd used to the idea of someone telling jokes.
Right.
So you have a job. It's a little more of a job to do. And if you have a natural MC, which I think there are very few like real naturals at it.
Yeah.
Who can just go up and start talking to the crowd and it just works.
Right.
Then you have to sort of, that's another one where you got to fake it a little bit. You got to pretend like, hey guys, welcome to the show. Like, you know, you might not really be feeling that, but then you got to like, if you got almost like, remember like, how did I do that? Like, what was that? I remember I used to do this, you know, I used to host more. So how did I do that? It doesn't feel authentic anymore because it is more of a job, especially compared to headlining.
And that's why, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, as a headline, you can just settle in and you can have a slow build to something. If you're doing something that has like a 7-minute build as an MC, your set's over, you know, by the time you get to it. And they weren't even listening for the first 2-3 minutes anyway, because they're just getting used to the idea of someone on stage talking. So, you know, you have to change the bits you do. You might not want to do certain bits. You might want to do other bits, but it's too early in the show to talk about systemic racism, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
And so it's you get to the point when you're headlining, you're like, I'm the most authentic I've ever been. And then you MC, you're like, MCing is inauthentic to me because I'm not a natural MC. And so it's work. It's harder. And you don't do as well sometimes.
I see why they want me to do it after the GM told me that.
Yeah.
I was like, I get it. And then you get paid more. You know, they do like the New York thing where the host gets paid more than the feature.
Yeah.
You know, like at like Gotham or Caroline's and stuff like that. So I totally get it and I don't mind it. But, you know, just sometimes I like to, you know, I'd like to like just head out after my set after a 2-show night or something like that.
But, right, yeah.
But then and then at the same time, it's just building up the skill set and not really, and just being more present and authentic on stage, where it's just like, because I was watching, I told Greg this, because Greg is on the show that's up this week, and that motherfucker just killed, just as far as like, if you go see Greg Stone, it's a full experience of you know who the fuck he is once he leaves the stage. You have an idea of what he is, who he is and what he's about for the most part. There's an aspect of him that you know. And that's where it's like, yeah, that guy's good. So if you go to see him, there's an experience. It's not just like, you know, I forgot who the fuck I saw. You know.
Right, right.
So it's just like, and that's like, and the embodiment of what I'm trying to do, what I've been trying to do and what I've been working towards. And I think I have that to a certain, I know I do, but it's you kind of see it in others before you see it in yourself anyway.
Right.
You see people's progression. Cause that happened to me a lot when I was in theater school. Like, you really learn you're obviously learning, but you learn more when you're watching your colleagues, when you're watching them do scene work and all that shit. It's the same thing.
And you can get kind of an inferiority complex doing that. You feel like you're not growing as fast, or you haven't turned the corner the way they have, you know.
Yeah.
And you're kind of waiting. I remember when I was first starting out, I used to not write very fast.
Okay.
In my opinion. I always felt like I never had anything new, or rarely had anything new that was any good. And I felt like all my friends that were starting out at the same time always seemed to have something new, a new bit every week, or at least a new tag for a bit that was really good, you know. And I'd be like, man, I've been doing the same set more or less for 2-3 months. I can't write anything good, you know.
Yeah.
And then I would see them, it would kind of make me feel like not inferior, but like it would kind of try to like kind of light that fire. Like, I got to work harder. What's wrong with me? I can't generate material like that. Mm-hmm. And then one of those people in that group who always seemed to be writing new stuff said the same thing to me about me. They said, you know, I'm trying to be like you, man. I'm doing the same old jokes, and you're up there every week with something new and killing. And you know, so I was like, no, I'm not. I can actually tell you specifically the last time I wrote something I liked, you know. But as far as they were concerned, I was the one who was progressing and turning that corner. And I felt like in my mind, like I'm working too slow. It's not coming as quickly as I want. All these people are generating more good material than me.
Yeah.
You know, it's partly perception. And partly it's true also. Like, if you know how many minutes you have, and you know how many minutes your friends have,
right,
when you're starting out. And so if your friend says, man, you come up with new stuff every week, you know you don't. But they feel the same way. Even if they are writing something new every week, they might think, I'm writing something every week, but it sucks. Like, I'm not going to laugh off it.
Yeah.
So I might as well have not written that, you know. And whereas someone like me works slower, but generally when I would do something new, it would work. You know, I wouldn't bomb with a new bit. So the perception is every time you write something, it's killer.
Yeah.
But the reality was, it takes me a long time to write something, and I'm not going up there with talking about what I did today. You know, I wasn't that type of open micer.
Yeah.
And, you know, you watch these people and you're like, oh man, I'm being left behind and all this stuff. And, you know, it's probably not exactly true.
Yeah. It's just you beating yourself up.
Yeah. And then also when you get to the point when you're featuring, let's say you've got your 25 minutes, you finally got a half hour and you can do these 20, 25 minute sets. And then you realize 2 years later, you still only have 25 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not because you're not writing. It's because every time you write something new, you take something else out of the set. You know, it's like your feature set's getting really good, but you're not getting any higher as far as how much time you have.
Right. Right.
And then when you get the headliner, and like, you know, I was stuck on 45 minutes for what felt like years. It was, you know, replacing old stuff with new stuff, but I couldn't get past 45. I was like, I only can do 45. Why is that? And then eventually you get enough of a backlog of material you like that you can do an hour, no problem. But, you know, it's like you just get stuck. You're improving, but your time isn't going up.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, last weekend I did 47 because I had some guest spot, and then I was like, okay, I need to get the fuck. But then when I was like, fuck, I forgot a bit. Like, I went back and got, you know, as a point I want to do, you're kind of like, I want to do this bit for me.
Right.
And I went back because it was supposed to go inside of a chunk, but I forgot to do it. And then I did it, and then I forgot like two other chunks would have made it like in like over 50, but I was just like, okay, that's enough. I've put them through enough. Like, I felt like it was a good show and everything, but I was like, I've put them through enough. It's
right.
It's like 15 right. people here. They need to go to work. It's on a Sunday night, you know. But
yeah.
But yeah, like that's definitely, I was like, ah, fuck, it should be. I wanted to have more I wish that I wouldn't have forgotten those bits, because those were newer ones that I liked.
Yeah.
But I knew that they worked because I did them during the weekend. But just putting it all together, because even JL told me that he's like, you're overdue. You need to do an album. And I was like,
But you don't have to. I was talking about this with somebody else recently. In the age of the 7-track, 20-minute album,
mm-hmm.
you don't have to do. I mean, JL just did the opposite. He did a double album, but
yeah.
you know, you don't have to do an hour. You can do a 42-minute album.
Yeah, that's true.
In fact, for me, like, since a lot of my stuff lately is so in the moment, I've thought about just doing like a half-hour EP and just putting it out, you know, like maybe sometime next year instead of waiting for that tight hour. Just some of these bits won't be, they won't be so in the moment by the time I get an hour that I like, you know, so they won't be doing as well, or they won't be, they won't be relevant anymore. They won't be what I'm thinking about anymore, what I care about. So then if you don't record it, the bit just goes away. It just it doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
You know, it's just lost. So I thought about that. Like, everyone's going shorter. Fuck it. I'll go shorter. I mean, Netflix is doing 15 minutes.
Yeah.
You see these comics to watch lists, and it's a bunch of people who have 11 minutes of material.
Well, part of you, isn't part of you a purist where you're like, well, I want to do it like my heroes did it. I want to do like Martin Lawrence did an hour. Like his comedy album was an hour. I want to do that. Like, I want to do what my heroes did.
Yeah, there's definitely that, but there's also the I don't want to be the out of touch old guy either.
Yeah.
And, you know, this it's so easy to record yourself. You can do a half hour in March and do another half hour in November if you really want, you know. Mm-hmm. So you can be the one who changes the game. So if the trend is everyone's doing shorter, which is not everyone's doing shorter, but if the trend is going that way, that's fine. But you can also start your own trend. You can just put out, you know, comics don't put out singles, but you can put out something shorter. You can be like JL. How many comics have a double album? You know, Dane Cook.
Right. Right.
So if, you know, as an artist, it's like you got to take the everyday philosophy and sort of sometimes apply it to everything else. The everyday philosophy, it feels right. This feels right to talk about today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wrote this today, or this is what's going on in my life or in the world, and it feels right. And then if you're looking at your, you know, have all your bits kind of written out in front of you, you're like, you know, it feels right to do a half hour.
Mm-hmm.
Then just do a half hour, you know? Like the thing that all the heroes did, that's also just kind of what was done back then.
Yeah.
And you then, know, it's not like they had a choice necessarily.
And it's then one of them.
You got,
oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I was just going to say one of them's Louis.
Right. And well, Louis started a trend. Everyone was trying to do the hour a year. And it turns out that doesn't work for almost any other comic.
Right.
And so. But it felt right to him,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that was kind of audacious, but he kept doing it for a few years and it kept working.
And he was trying to kind of chase in Carlin a bit, and Carlin was doing that shit because he was trying to pay his taxes off.
Yeah, but Carlin wasn't even doing an hour a year. And that's kind of a misnomer. He was doing an hour every two, you know, he pretty much said so. There's interviews where he says, I want to have every year. I want to write a new half hour.
Yeah.
And he might have done a couple where, I mean, he did once or twice where he did like back-to-back years. He did a special. There was one where he did a special a year after another special.
Right.
And his wife had talked about that, I think. Maybe it was his daughter. I think it was his wife. But it wasn't as good. It wasn't quite time yet to do that next special.
Yeah.
So, you know, and it's like you're chasing something that might not even be, it's a little bit of an exaggeration anyway, the hour a year. I mean, Carlin had, I think, 9 or 10 specials, and he started doing them in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't have 30.
No.
So not literally an hour, but he did a couple books too, which was a lot of it was just stuff he wrote that didn't make it to the stage.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he definitely worked a lot, but yeah, whatever feels right. That's what I feel at this point. Doesn't have to fit any pattern, any paradigm. And often when people change the game a little bit, it's because they just kind of followed that, like this kind of audacious thing that they we're going to do 15-minute specials. Everyone rolls their eyes. Yeah. Or it's an audacious thing to say, let's do a special where there's no audience, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like Drew Michael did, which right. I would never do. And in effect, I don't think that worked, but...
I didn't see it.
Yeah, but it's, you know, it's like, well, this felt right, you know? You do it. You're an artist, you're supposed to follow what you feel. This felt right, you know?
I know Bamford did hers in front of her parents, too. I think that's the most... fearless shit ever. Like that like that shit was wild. But I think I don't know if some of those jokes she had, I mean, obviously she did them in front of real, you know, crowds and stuff, but
yeah.
From what I haven't, cuz I used to be a real scholar of her bits, but I know like from a lot of them that I heard she would bring back or she'd done them before. But just for that special being on in front of her parents, like that's like, even though there's a couple bells and whistles, like as far as the production value is concerned, it's still in front of your mom and dad. Like that shit is like, ugh. I thought I was doing something being in front of my boss and mostly everybody I know, but it's just like, yeah, it's a different animal. Well, let me ask you this about, like your Mitch McConnell has been getting praise. Have you ever thought about adding, like, you know, adding some of that into your stand up at all? Like adding, you know, certain things that you do on the podcast that work. Have you ever thought about it?
Not too much. I haven't necessarily made like an effort. Like I need to do this on stage. If it comes up where I'm going to like do a little bit of a voice or something, I'll do it. Like, you know, if it feels right, but I'm not an actor and I probably should have taken some acting classes, you know, 20 years ago, but
who's to say you can't do it now?
I know I could do it now, but I mean, like, or improv classes, that's really what comics do when they want to act out characters. They take improv classes.
Yeah.
But, without that, without any like real training, I don't know that it would work. I think it would be like anything you do, you're going to be bad at it before you're good at it in comedy. But I feel like it would be kind of a speed bump in my set if I started to do too much like act out stuff. But if it's just doing a voice, like a dumb Southern accent or whatever,
yeah,
I'll do that. I'll do that. No problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't need to really become a character necessarily. The Mitch McConnell thing we did on the podcast, that just happened. Like I wasn't working. I don't think it was a very good Mitch McConnell impression. But I had funny things to say. I mean, it was funny.
Yeah, like because you're funny without the voices and stuff. But I was just thinking, like, oh, is that something else that could be go in your toolbox?
Yeah, it could be. And also, there are things that might just be in the podcast toolbox. I'm definitely with the podcast. I'm aware that it's an audio medium.
Yeah,
you know? And I'm aware that like if you can say something, like I'm not like a guy who has a million voices. I'm not like JL or anything.
Yeah,
but I can do a funny Southern accent.
Right.
You know, there's a couple of times where I can kind of dip into a funny way of saying something, or like a dumb white girl voice or something.
Yeah,
and I definitely will think about that when we're talking on the podcast. Like this would be funnier to say with a different tone of voice. You know, because someone's listening to this audio, it's not just them sitting around a room with us talking.
Because sometimes when I'm listening to you guys, it's like mainly it's your show, mainly Three Guys On and Vag with Adrian Appalucci and Sarah Tolomash. They'll be talking and it's like, that's a fucking bit.
Yeah.
And I'll text Adrian like, yo, you gotta do that on stage. Like, I'm jealous.
Yeah.
And you guys do the same thing sometimes where you'll have something that, like, that's a fully fleshed out bit. Like, if you just, like, you know, made that conversion. So it doesn't happen for me that easily.
Well, you're also by yourself.
Well, that's
you know,
true.
Or you're on the phone with someone. I think if you're sitting in the room with a couple comics, like I think when you've done our podcast, you probably had those moments.
There's a couple bits we because you gave me that tag for the bit that I did on TV, the dolphin tail.
Yeah. Yeah, that was on the podcast.
Black girl leg. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That. But yeah, like stuff like that. But and I guess that is true when I'm. Yeah. That. Yeah. You're right.
Yeah, I feel like that's. I mean, for me too. I'm less funny when I'm alone, even though I'm a loner.
Mm-hmm.
But even just kind of hearing other people talk or whatever, and I can jump in, then, you know, the comedy light bulb is like blinking nonstop. You know, like,
yeah.
I can say something now. I'm going to say something now. There's a funny thing now. And then when I'm by myself, I just sort of remind myself, if I'm driving like to a show, that's when I do a lot of writing. Cause I'm like, fuck, I'm on my way to a show. I got to think of something.
And you're listening to music and stuff.
Yeah. But I can get too lost in the music. Sometimes I'll turn the music off because it'll be too distracting. I like to have some distraction. I like to be like in motion or have some music on. But if it's something I'm listening to like too consciously, too intently,
mm-hmm.
I can't write. You know, I'm too busy listening to the music. I guess I can't multitask or whatever. But yeah, like you have to kind of pay attention to what makes that comedy light bulb go off. And being around in a room with three or four comics that you know and that you riff well with, automatically bits just happen, you know?
Right.
That wouldn't have happened if you were just talking about that thing to yourself. A topic.
Yeah. That's true. Oh, and yeah. I got one more question and then an off mic one after we're done. Do you think it is... You can still be righteous and do comedy and be, or just be in showbiz.
Righteous as in
like a decent, like a halfway, just like a decent fucking person.
Yeah. I mean, everyone says like, it's such a slimy industry and all that stuff. And, a lot of phonies and everything else, which is true.
Yeah.
But I guess you can. I feel like the people who the sort of obviously upwardly mobile, like almost like comedy social climber type,
mm-hmm.
you can tell that they're kind of pieces of shit.
That they're what now?
And they're pieces of shit.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like okay, just, gotcha.
And they don't get penalized for it. Mm-hmm. You know, you can see it like, I'm going to be good. I'm going to go to this club. I'm going to get there on time. And I'm going to stay out of the way of the staff. And I'm going to stick to my time and not go over the light, and I'm going to do very well. And everyone's going to notice, and they don't.
Yeah.
The person who's kind of a prick, who shows up late, who kind of, you know, hits on all the waitresses or whatever, they still will get past you, even though they're pieces of shit, you know? So you can be a good person and make it, but being a good person, you know, being a bad person or a good person, I don't think it really... I think people who are bad people don't get penalized for it, put it that way.
Mm.
And often they, since they're like just advantageous opportunists, they actually move faster.
Yeah.
You know, the sort of phony people. But yeah, I mean, you know, I guess there's examples. There's a lot of just regular good people doing comedy. Dave Attell is a good dude. He's a regular guy.
Yeah.
You know, like, and he might not be super famous. He should be more famous, but he's obviously super well respected and never has to worry about getting another gig, you know?
Right. That's true.
There's a lot of guys like that. You know, I don't think you have to be Tom Hanks. You know, you don't have to be like the guy everyone loves, but it does seem like the cynical social climbers who, you know, like, you know, like if you see a dude who, he's like one of these like fake male feminist types.
Yeah.
And you can tell he's just doing that to get into the company of women.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's his game. Like your game might be buy her a drink or, you know, slide into her DMs or whatever you do.
Be nice to her.
Yeah. This person's game is like, I respect women so much.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell as a straight man what he's doing. You
yeah.
can tell that he's phony and he's just doing that because he wants to get alone with that girl and make a move and she trusts him and it disarms her and all that. And if you tell a girl that, if you tell her, like, you know, he's just full of shit, he's just trying to hook up with you, she'll say, no, he's not. He's nice.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like that with, like, the comics who are, like, disingenuous, glad-handing, you know, the social climber, the phony types. Like, everybody knows it, and no one penalizes them for it.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
It just is what it is. But there's probably that guy in all aspects of life. There's an Eddie Haskell in every office, probably, in every field, who just puts on the smile and, you know, shakes your hand and pats you on the back just to get ahead, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, although on the other hand, the people who are assholes sometimes get the more loyal following, you know?
That's true, too.
Because, I mean, I don't really know what's going on with this New York comedy drama with the that Compound Media radio show, guys.
Yeah, one of the girls I had on my podcast, Chrissy Mayer, and
yeah,
probably one of my personally probably one of the best episodes I had this year, because we were talking about, you know, Me Too type stuff and all this. It was just a really good episode. You know how it is when you feel like shit comes. Oh, that was good. This guest was good.
I'm gonna get a lot of tweets.
Yeah,
so many tweets.
Yeah, well, even I don't even think, because I only get like a few hundred listeners, so it's like,
right.
I can, you just know, like, on the intrinsic level, like, you know, when it felt good.
Right.
Not like nobody's, oh shit, that mundane festival, but I just know it was good. And then somebody was telling me about it. I kind of have an idea of what's going on, but I was just, yeah, like, ah, yeah, it shouldn't get.
But the people, I mean, the side that she's on, which is that, mm-hmm, I guess that show with Aaron Berg and Gino Visconti, and
yes,
you know, I don't know those guys really, but they're being painted as like this fucking couple of pricks, you know, mm-hmm, like, you know, like a morning fucking radio show type,
sure,
thing, you know. And I don't know if they're really pricks or if they just, if they're edgy, you know, but
right,
I do know that it seems like a lot of people like that, their fans like it when they are dicks.
Yes.
You know, and they become more loyal fans. They're the ones who go out and tweet at the person who's being targeted and saying, fuck you, man, you know, all that stuff. Tweeting like disturbing shit, threats, or
yeah,
even just trolling and heckling via social media.
And that's when it becomes a problem, when it's like harming with Kate Willett, where she's it feels like she's fearing for her life. Like, that shit shouldn't get there, you know?
Yeah.
So that's
And that's the thing where those guys are, maybe they're being dicks and it actually helps them. That's the brand. You know, we're dicks. I think Opie and Anthony, when they were on air together, when they first got syndicated to DC before I ever lived in New York,
mm-hmm,
they were dicks. They were like frat boy assholes to women. Like, they would have women on and do, like, you know, dumb shit and basically, you know, treat women like shit for laughs. And their audience was huge, and the audience was loyal, and their audience was like ready to go to war for them. You know, these sort of radio wars.
Yeah.
I think it's so stupid. I mean, I know sometimes there's even podcast wars, but I couldn't even imagine telling our listeners to go after someone.
Yeah.
I would feel like such a piece of shit for doing that. Like, all right, listeners, mobilize.
Yeah.
You know, get your memes ready. Let's tweet the memes. We're so hardcore.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, they do that, and radio shows do that, and people are explicitly assholes, and then someone, one of their friends, or, you know, in this case, one of their wives will post, like, they're actually really nice people. I say, mm-hmm, well, okay, but it doesn't seem like it from listening to them. And when I tried to listen to Opie and Anthony when they were first in D.C., I tried to listen to them because I was delivering pizzas and I was just in my car. This is pre-podcast, you know,
right,
before you could pull up a podcast.
Right.
And I liked to kind of talk, you know, that wasn't sports,
mm-hmm,
just like, you know, guy talk or whatever. And I didn't like their show at all because of them. I liked when they had comics on. They had Patrice on, they had Colin Quinn on, Jim Norton, of course, was always on. And I would listen specifically because pre-social media, like, this is a window into another city's comedy scene, and they talk about comedy, and they very inside stuff. I love that. But when it was just them, and they didn't have a, like, they didn't have Louis C.K. in the studio or whatever.
Yeah.
I'd be like, these guys are bad for women. They should have C.K. on.
Yeah.
But, I wish I had Louis C.K. on.
For some reason, I don't know, that fucks with me a little more than Cosby.
Louis C.K.?
Yeah, man. It, for some, because, like, I don't know. I don't know what it is. It's like, shit, I don't even want to get, we got to wrap this up. But I just feel bad. I feel bad for everybody involved. And it's like a dude that I, you know, like, people say, if you fucking like Louis, you're a dick rider. Like, he doesn't have talent. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because he does this weird shit, you know, that's hurting people. It's just like,
well, look, it's like, you know, we all like people who did problematic shit.
Yeah.
Artists. And we don't always really know what they did, or we sort of, it happened a long time ago.
Yeah.
So we don't care. You know, John Lennon beat up women.
He did?
But apparently. And he was younger and he stopped doing that, and it was a long time ago and he fixed himself. But it's in the past.
Right.
And there's a lot of that shit. You know, didn't Chuck Berry put cameras in a bathroom or something?
I think
and,
so, like, yeah.
Yeah, like, there's a lot of problematic shit, and you just sort of, you learn to live with it. But when it's in the moment, when it's just happening, you can't put it behind the person, you know? And so we just have to, like, just remember, like, oh, yeah, I liked him. Like, I guess I can separate maybe the stand-up from the other stuff, but, you know, maybe in 20 years people will not care. Maybe in 2 years people won't care.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's just the way it goes. There's a lot of problematic people that we like. And it's, you know, like, groups like PETA always try to, like, go into a slaughterhouse to take undercover video.
Mm-hmm.
And slaughterhouses don't allow that, of course. The reason they don't allow that is because when you see what they do to those animals, you're not going to want to buy their product.
Right.
You know, like, and with CK, with social media in general, you're sort of seeing what these people do in real time. You know, it's not just like an abstract thing to talk about from decades ago. Like, you know, turns out he wasn't such a good guy. And, you know, intellectualized, it's more visceral, especially for women and women in comedy, because CK is one person, but it represents for
a
them.
A lot of motherfuckers.
Yeah, and represents the whole of it, which CK is the target. It's like people who bash, you know, Walmart, but they don't talk about Target, you know, the other stores that do the same kind of the same thing, or they talk about unhealthy fast food, but they only mention McDonald's. They don't talk about all the other places because it's the top one.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, CK is he's the reference point for that, for a lot of shit that goes on that's not done by CK, but it's just like, this is just like Louis CK. And so his name's going to be branded as that for a while.
Yeah. It just sucks.
And, you know, maybe he'll figure out a way to communicate to people how he's changed, and maybe people will accept it, or enough people.
Well, I go by with what you said. If he's really trying to do this shit right, I would be disappointed even further if he doesn't address it. I think he's starting to now.
Yeah.
And I think, like you said, he has to black box it. People will go see him.
Right.
But he has to work his shit. The best thing for him to do would be to black box his shit and work it out there. And then people will want to see it. Like, people, I found a way to see I Love You Daddy because somebody hooked, you know, but it wasn't that great.
Thank God.
You know.
Because what if you liked it?
I know. I would have been a piece of shit. But
you would have had to hide that. Like, I didn't like it that much.
But that Goodbye Jews bit, it's not much like it. Like, that fucking writing on that bit. Jesus Christ. That's his.
Yeah.
To me, that Goodbye Jews bit is his I Believe I Can Fly. For me, it
is. It's going to get him past a lot of problems.
God, I love that bit. Oh, my God. Well, the views of Chris Lambert, the problematic things that right. Chris Lambert said on this episode.
The views are his own. It does not represent.
Yeah. Make sure you separate yourself from this shit. I think that's it, man. I think we've done enough good work here, man. I think we've accomplished a lot. I'm happy that you came on the show to chat with me, man.
Yeah, you know, we texted about it like a month ago, and I forgot to follow up.
Yeah.
So,
and that's just me, it's my fault too. But I just gave you shit on your own show, where I was just like, Andy, you didn't even fucking talk to me, bro. So,
well, you know, like I said on my show, I don't know if it was that episode, but I generally, I'm a guy who doesn't talk to people much. I'll just kind of go stand off by myself.
And, that's true. You did. Yeah.
But if you talk to me, I'll talk to you all night. If you come up to me and initiate, yeah. I'll talk to you all night. Now, if you email me, I might not reply because I have a million emails to reply to. But like if I'm at a show or whatever, like people have to kind of approach me. And then I'm fine, but I'm just not, like, my default is just kind of be by myself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So sometimes I won't even think of that. Like, I'll be like, yeah, we'll do the podcast, and it won't even cross my mind again. Like, I should text Chris back, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Or if you call me, like, once or twice, like, if you call me and then you don't leave a message, I'll be like, oh, yeah, Chris called me, but I guess it wasn't a big deal. And then they'll...
Yeah,
I'll go back to being by myself, you know?
Yeah, no, dude, I'm, well, this is probably an off mic thing, but I can be the same way. There's a handful of people I talk to on the phone, and I think I did a pretty good job of it this year, because one of the goals was to be out there, be more sociable, and I feel like I've done that, so, yeah, but where can people find you? Plug your stuff. This will go up. God, what is this? This is the 24th right now. I know what the fuck am I doing? The curtain and all that shit. This will go up probably on the 3rd or 4th. No, yeah. What is this? No, shit. The 27th or the 28th. So if you,
okay. Well, then in that case, November 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, I'll be at Magoobies.
Okay.
In like Timonium, Maryland. It's basically Baltimore, but Timonium, Maryland.
Sure.
So come to those shows. Vintage Klein on Twitter. I do have a website that hasn't been updated in like a year. It's on my list of things to do. But
sure.
AndyKlein.com. I found that there's not a lot of website traffic. I think people, when they look for it, they look for you on Twitter and Facebook and stuff.
Yeah.
So it's kind of secondary for me, but... it's there, AndyKlein.com. CD is called Vintage. You can buy it or stream it or whatever. All the places where people do those things. So, there you go.
All right. And hold on to the line, Andy. Thank you so
much.
Wait a minute. Oh, go ahead.
For the podcast, Three Guys
three
On.
Guy, of course. Well, they should know that, but yeah, Three Guys On.
Yeah. If they've listened this far, they probably know that. But yeah, ThreeGuysOn.com. The word three, not the number. Although I think if you do it with the number, it goes to us also. But yeah, Three Guys On. That's the website. That's the podcast. Me, Randolph Terrence, and always a third comic sitting in, a rotating third comic sitting in.
That's right. Well, thank you so much,
including
Andy.
Including you sometimes.
Including me sometimes. Yeah, I gotta. Are you guys going to be there Thanksgiving?
I'm out of town, so I think if Randolph records something, it might just be like a Woke Files. Or I might give him my my Zoom H6 where you can hook up four mics.
Oh, you have an H6?
Yeah, I've got an H4 and an H6.
I saw one of those for the first time over the weekend. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Wow.
I got an H6 with the attachment to add two more XLR inputs. So it literally has six inputs. I've recorded people's like sets on them before.
Oh wow.
But yeah, like I feel like because of the H4, Randolph has the H4 for the Woke Files.
Right.
So there's only two inputs on that. But if he wants to do that Thanksgiving, he can do that. But if he wants to have a few people over and record you know, like a Three Guys On episode, I can give him my age 6.
Okay.
And it'd be weird because I've never missed an episode.
Wow.
But, I mean, it's because I have the equipment. If I'm out of town, we can't court. But now that I have this portable thing, which I've had for like a year and a half, 2 years. But, yeah, so Randolph might be doing something Thanksgiving weekend.
Yeah, maybe we'll see what happens. All right. Well, so hold on to the line, Andy. So thanks so much for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you next time. Everybody.